All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. This is going to be a little bit of a different one for you guys. This is our annual end of the year wrap up. And boy, are we excited. We are joined, as always, by Brendan Veman, who's my trusty compadre, and two other key contributors to the team over here. Mr. Matt Polvey, who's on our analyst team, and Mr. TiVo, who's our super producer. Let's go around the table. Let's say good morning to everybody. Brennan, we'll start with you. How's it going, man?
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
It is going great. What a year we had, and what a year we are going to have. So I, for one, am excited to talk about it.
All right, crypto savant, Matt Polvey, how are you doing?
Oh, I like that intro. Very well. Happy to be back. Haven't been on the podcast since this time last year, so it'll be fun to dive into what we were talking about last time. We have no idea what price predictions we gave at the end of last year, so looking forward to hearing how far off or how close we were. But yeah, lots to talk about today, so excited
to hear. No, I agree. It's going to be an exciting one. We've got an awesome outline. We're going to be talking about everything that you guys are even going to care about. It's going to be incredible. But TiVo, let's hear from you, my friend. Super producing in the background, laying low, staying high. How are things going?
Things are going great. Glad to be here for another year in review episode. We did this exactly 1 year ago. And I don't know. The sentiment last time we did this was pretty low. I remember it was about the time we've talked about it before on the podcast, but my own mother was asking me if this crypto job was going to end.
Yeah. Kind of in the wake of FTX blowing up, right?
Exactly. So I think we were looking at our outline. We got a lot more positive stuff to talk about.
Thank God.
And yeah, wild year to look back on, honestly.
Yeah, no, I actually want to start with our predictions. I don't know if you could pull them up, TiVo. What did we all kind of predict where we would be this time, sort of last year?
Right. So we'll do it again at the end of the show, but we just did a Bitcoin price prediction at the end of the show. We all went around, and we have the crypto analyst, Brendan, coming in at the most conservative. The most conservative.
The furthest off.
29. Yeah.
In other words.
I tried to be nice. I tried to be nice. 29K. Couldn't even break a three handle there. And then coming up after that, we had Tide. I believe I went first. So I took the risk as the producer and not the expert. I went first and I put 33. So I said 33 for two reasons. It was my lucky number, and I was just basically learning support and charting from working with you guys for a little bit. So I saw that. I said 33. Pizza also said 33. Bryce came in at 36. Mm-hmm. And then Matt playing the smart man went last and asked if it was Price is Right rules, and he didn't. Well, he wanted to make sure he didn't go over. So Matt went up to 37. So we had a 29 to 37 range. And honestly, I mean, I don't think that's bad. That's very optimistic. So the price at when we did this episode, I think it was about 16 or 16.5 maybe. So we were all bulls. And we saw a lot of stuff happen over the last year, specifically over the last couple months. But Bitcoin beat us all.
Yeah, wow. I mean, this is one of those areas where we're happy to be wrong about it, because we all bet that the price of Bitcoin was going to go up. We just underestimated how good Bitcoin was going to perform. So, you know, if anything, this is the best case scenario, right? It'd be a lot worse if we all said 29 to, you know, 40K, and then all of a sudden it was at like 10K at the end of the year. But luckily, you know, we were wrong towards the upside.
If that was the case, then TiVo would definitely be back with his mom. His mom would have been correct. But no, we cleared out a lot of bad actors. I think, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about today was just like the crucifix, or the sort of, crazy sort of refinement that the crypto market went through. And I'm talking about it like, I think it's called a crucifix, right? Or a crucible. Sorry, not a crucible, is where in chemistry you sort of refine some sort of element, right, under fire. And under this crucible, you kind of get this refining process, right? And so we had that in the market, right? Where we had 2022, it was very hot. It was very, you know, volatile. There was a lot of, you know, pain, if you will. But we came out the other side of it refined. We got rid of a lot of bad actors. No more Alex Mashinsky. No more fraudulent lending from Voyager or from Celsius or from Luna or FTX, or no more predatory sort of behaviors. Now, of course, there's now a vacuum of bad guys, and I'm sure more bad guys will fill that void, which we're not hoping for, but, you know, technology is agnostic, and good people use it for good reasons and bad people use it for bad reasons. And so, they're, you know, just like the internet, just like the US dollar, just like pretty much anything, guns. I mean, you can't just say a technology in and of itself is evil, because there are good people that use it. And so we do have like this whole shift now, where in 2022, you know, when we would talk to institutional asset allocators, everybody put the pause button on. There was a chilling effect across the market because everybody's got a boss, right? And when you're thinking about, you know, oh, are we going to bring Bitcoin into the portfolio? Are we going to start talking about Bitcoin to our clients? Nobody wants to really put their name out on the line or risk themselves when they don't have to, right? Nobody's pressuring, putting a gun to your head saying, you know, you got to offer Bitcoin to your clients or whatever. And so nobody did in 2022. The institutions kind of just backed down and just were like, yeah, we're just going to kind of wait this one out. But now what we saw in 2023, just a complete sentiment shift. You know, the winter has thawed, and I'm really excited about it. But gentlemen, let's dive into it. What surprised you most about 2023? Matt, let's start with you.
Oh man. So when we go around the table,
yeah, so you wanted to go last again, huh?
I wanted the Price is Right rules again. Yeah.
Not today.
You know, that's a good question. I think one thing that I've been surprised by is the resilience of the Solana ecosystem and how strong that came back after being, you know, pretty heavily affected by the fallout with FTX. It certainly was not on my bingo card for this year. I was not expecting Solana to rise back from the ashes in the way that it did. I think there was a lot to be said for the technology, and you know, I'm happy to see that it's being appreciated, but definitely wasn't expecting this level of velocity, I suppose, from that ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree.
To build on that, as a producer of this podcast, we had Austin Federa on not once but twice over the last year, and we had, I believe we had him late spring.
Yeah, he's the head of strategy for Solana, by the way.
Yes, and then we had him again at the end of August, maybe early September, and he was vibrant, and it even caught my attention as a non-technical guy. I'm like, holy shit, like this guy is fired up about what they're working on, what they're building. We got invited out to Amsterdam for their conference. A little last minute, we couldn't make it. But I don't know, I left that and went and bought a bunch of Solana. I don't know if you've talked about that. I was like, God, that guy just seems confident. Like I believe that there's some momentum there.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. So that's why you listen to this podcast, because we bring you people that are, you know, working on good stuff.
Amen. Brendan, what surprised you about this year?
I would piggyback off what Matt said, and Solana was a big surprise for me. The other two things were basically everything that happened from institutional adoption. That happened so fast. I mean, like all the biggest asset managers on the planet were just an avalanche effect. And so that happened really fast. And I was a little bit taken off guard about like just how eager they were to all jump in, especially with how fast we went from, hey, let's go and file for a Bitcoin ETF, and then immediately turned around like a few months later, and then they all wanted in on Ethereum ETFs. And it seems like they are yeah, just really eager to dive into the space. And I guess the last thing that kind of caught me off guard is how fast the gaming industry caught traction this year. And they're about a year ahead of schedule of what I thought, or where I thought that they would be at. A ton of money came in. The funding and like capital being raised towards the gaming side of crypto, like, just did not cease. There's so much excitement and traction, and all these other ecosystems are building. It's not just Ethereum. We're seeing a lot happen on Solana. We're seeing a lot happen on Avalanche. We're seeing a lot happen with Immutable X and all these other like factors, like, just all happening at the same time. And so I think gaming really surpassed kind of my expectations. I thought, hey, maybe in the bear market, things were going to settle down. They'll get excited again in the bull market, but that wasn't the case. There's so much building that happened in the bear market that now we're in like the first inning, and gaming's still like a super prevalent topic. So, you know, it's a good thing that caught me off guard. I think we're about a year ahead of schedule from where I thought the gaming space would have been.
Yeah, I think I echo that sentiment. Everybody was pleasantly kind of surprised this year. I mean, Bitcoin up 160% on the year after what was just the most gut-wrenching bear market I've been through. I mean, that was surprising in and of itself. Also surprising was the fact that Ethereum only was up about 85%. So Bitcoin outperformed Ethereum by double. I mean, I don't think anybody saw a world where that would be happening, right? I mean, everybody's like, oh, Ethereum is Bitcoin alpha, right? I mean, or beta. If Bitcoin's going up, Ethereum's going up harder. If Bitcoin's going down, Ethereum's going down harder, right? That's market beta. And that just wasn't the case. Bitcoin just outperformed pretty much, you know, everything. Obviously, in the last 3 months of the year, we've had a huge craze. With meme coins and altcoins starting to take a big pop. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But I think that was one of the most surprising things, just the underperformance of Ethereum relative to pretty much everything, which I don't think is going to be sort of a trend that persists. I do think that as the Bitcoin ETF, that was another surprising thing, BlackRock coming out and like issuing a Bitcoin ETF and like fighting the SEC. And we even see, you know, the SEC posts every person that they sort of meet with. And there's just a whole Rolodex of meetings that they've had with Fidelity and BlackRock and all these, you know, trillion-dollar companies, WisdomTree. I mean, it's crazy. And so I definitely didn't have that on my bingo card, like the BlackRocks and the Fidelities of the world inside the offices of the SEC fighting for our sake. I mean, that's pretty cool. That was pretty unsuspecting. So a lot of surprises. I also didn't have it on my bingo card that Liz Warren would be launching a militia, an anti-crypto army to fight all of us heathens with self-hosted wallets. I mean, what do you guys think of this? I mean, this seems pretty crazy. TiVo, I know you've kind of been looking at this because it's gotten so much just virality online. What do you make of the whole sitch?
Yeah, she is a warrior for the establishment. I think that it's easy to see, especially on Twitter and crypto Twitter, is like, if you're against the people, like, you're getting ratioed. Anything you see on her is just absolutely ratioed.
Yeah.
Same thing with Gensler. So that just kind of gives
the ratio for those people
like,
who are listening, like, what does that mean?
Yeah. So good point. So when you throw something on X, or formerly known as Twitter, is like, you have likes, retweets, and then comments. So if your likes are at 100 likes, and then you have, you know, 500 comments, that means that's not a good sign. That means people are yelling. People are yelling at you. Yeah, and so you can kind of tell, like, she's trying to phrase it as she's fighting for the people and all that. But if you look anything into her, she's, you know, getting paid by the big banks, yeah, and consistently is just trying to push this narrative that crypto's for terrorists and criminals and, you know, all that type of stuff. And she's trying to come for, you know, the people in the industry that are trying to move it forward and doesn't really want to have a conversation. It's kind of her way or the highway, it seems.
Yeah, it just seems totally crazy. And I saw actually a little discussion of some of the bills that she's been proposing. And a lot of this is just funded by the people who really own her and got her there, which is the American Bankers Association. And they like kind of co-authored this bill with her to try and, you know, make holding crypto illegal. And I think that this is going to end really poorly. I think it's going to be reminiscent of the crypto wars that we had back in like the mid to late 90s, where at one point it was illegal to hold encryption without like a federal sort of munitions dealer license. Like it was like encryption was reserved for military. It was military grade encryption. That was, you know, that's what it is, right? But now that same exact encryption technology, the same exact one that people, politicians, legislators, banks, whatever, tried to ban 25 years ago, that's the same encryption that if you look on your webpage right now and it says HTTPS, that S right there means it's secure. It means that all the traffic is encrypted. That S was supposed to be illegal, but now it's everywhere. And I think that Bitcoin is going to be similar in a way. I think people are going to realize, you know, maybe this is a technology that we can use that's, you know, a public good. That we don't need to ban. We don't need to be scared of it. We could actually leverage it to make our society grow so that we could protect our individuals, right? I mean, at the end of the day, the government is there to serve the individuals and not the other way around, right? And so governments need to protect individual liberties. And encryption is, in, you know, by the way, that crypto war ended in a you know, huge lawsuit, Bernstein versus the United States, where in that lawsuit, the court system decided encryption is software source code, and that source code is protected by the First Amendment. So guess what? You can't ban it. And so I think that this whole thing smells very similar. I think it's going to go the same way. I think individual liberties will win out in the long run. I think the courts will see that. The courts are already, you know, kind of fighting on behalf of you know the American citizens, kind of against these regulatory bodies and these agencies that are overstepping. And, you know, last thing I'll say on that before I turn it over is, you know, Liz Warren has proposed, you know, and sponsored, you know, hundreds of bills of which none of them have been passed. And she's supported, co-sponsored, you know, 1,500 bills and only 2.5% of those have been passed. And so she's batting zero for 1,000, it feels like. And, you know, rocking the golden sombrero, as any of you sports junkies would recognize that reference. It's not looking good for her and for her team, but you know, I think the good guys are going to win out on this one. But anyhow, let's move on from Liz Warren. And
I like how you keep calling her Liz Warren. You're buying the troll from the Twitter account. The Crypto 101 Twitter is firing Liz Warren trolls all day. I don't see anybody else calling her that besides our account.
Auntie Lizzie, knock, knock. All right, let's talk about what changes that we've seen since the bear market. You know, what is, you know, obviously prices have been up, but you know, me, Matt, Brendan, we're guys that use crypto, all these apps, all these exchanges, day in and day out. Brendan, let's start with you. I want to know sort of what's changed. Have the applications been more usable? Has liquidity grown? Like, you know, what are you seeing that's just markedly different if we kind of eliminate price from the whole thing?
Yeah, I think that the way that traders are trading has completely changed, right? We've had this bear market for almost a year and a half, and people had to have this constant mentality of like, where do I take profits and kind of where do I look to sell at? And we've completely shifted because, you know, I know you said no price, but price has completely shifted. And now we're seeing higher highs, higher lows. Everyone's looking at buying the dips. And the kind of big things that we built are a lot of like the RWA and tokenization space. And that's kind of like a big shift that I've started to see over the last 6 to 12 months. And even now, like big banking is talking about it. Like I think we had Citibank and Bank of America and maybe even JP Morgan. Like a lot of these big names are all super interested in this. And it's been eye-catching to me.
Yeah. It's funny that like, JP Morgan's CEO, Jamie Dimon, he'll go out and he'll say publicly on, you know, in a congressional testimony, I think we should ban Bitcoin. And then, and it's only used for illegal purposes, right? That's what he says. And then you literally have the same exact bank that offers Bitcoin, you know, private trusts, and they're going to be offering, you know, the ability for their clients to buy it. So it's kind of a conflict, right? Here the CEO thinks that it's illegal, yet he's still letting his clients interact with it. It's just, to me, it's a wild cognitive bias. And it's just, at the end of the day, Jamie Dimon trying to talk his own book and hope people don't look too much into it.
I mean, to his point, Chase has a ton of fines. I think 250 different fines over the last
billions of dollars worth of fines they've paid.
So I guess it is used by criminals, you know. If don't
forget, is the official bank of Jeffrey Epstein as well.
Yeah, I mean, those are the crooks. Those are the crooks, right? I mean, that's crazy. You know, they've adjudicated this, that they've been run by crooks in a sense. I mean, with all these fines and all these breaches, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, people are very clearly losing trust in all of these banking organizations, and you know, let's not even get started on that whole thing. But you know, I'm so glad that we live in a time where we could opt out and take a look, you know, at alternative ecosystems like Bitcoin, like Ethereum. And you know, as we kind of, you know, move from this world of, you know, analog sort of databases that some of these, you know, banks are still running, and fully digitize this. I was talking to somebody who worked at a big bank, and he said just the other year they finally retired their last COBOL and BASIC sort of lines of code. And I'm like, COBOL and BASIC were like languages that were invented in the 70s and 80s. And you were telling me like critical American infrastructure for our financial system was still built on that as recently as just a couple of years ago. And like, yeah, the problem is we can't find anybody who speaks these languages anymore, who you know, they've all aged out. Like that whole population that coded in COBOL and BASIC have aged out. And so now you have like an industry that's very clearly ripe for disruption. And it's going to be probably like, you know, that next jump where, you know, I think, you know, Larry Fink is spot on where he says the next generation for markets is tokenization, which really means, you know, full digitization. And so, you know, finance is kind of the last industry to go fully digital. You know, media went fully digital. Now, you know, nobody really buys DVDs. You go stream it, right? Nobody goes online, or sorry, nobody goes to the media store in order to buy a newspaper anymore. It's all online. Nobody really goes, you know, to the coffee shop to meet up with their buddies. They're, you know, they're going to talk to them online. So everything moves from the analog physical world over time towards digitization. For one reason or another, that's just a trend. And so, yeah, finance is the last to kind of go. But you know, it's just crazy how Bitcoin is now the 14th largest currency in the world. I got a kind of interesting little chart I want to show you guys, if I could pull it up right here. Let me see, share my screen for all those who are watching on YouTube. If you're not watching on YouTube, you're missing out. So let me share this real quick. If you could see, Bitcoin is the 14th largest currency in the world. If you kind of take a look at the stock of M1 money supply, Bitcoin's market cap, you know, right around $733 billion. there's more Bitcoin market value than there is Indian rupee. That's just crazy, right? I mean, this is truly fulfilling its purpose as a global currency. And I think that at some point here, the interesting thing that's going to happen is I think some of these countries are actually going to be fighting over who owns the most Bitcoin. They'll hold it in their reserves in some cases. It's going to be interesting to see that happen. But I like this chart, and I thought it was relevant to share because, you know, Bitcoin is fulfilling its purpose. And so even though, you know, some folks might be thinking, oh, Bitcoin, who uses that, right? Or where can I send my Bitcoin so I could buy coffee? You know, like everybody's like wants to just like, you know, where can I use this? It's like, it's actually a savings vehicle. You know, you don't really want to be spending it that much. You kind of want to be hoarding it and saving it. Sure, you could use Lightning Network or Liquid Network or, you know, all these different, you know, payment platforms and stuff, credit cards that are backed by Bitcoin. I think all that's fine and good. But when you look at it at the end of the day, you know, to me, Bitcoin, you know, really is a savings mechanism. And sure, you know, you could also use it as a medium of exchange, but that's secondary in my opinion. So anyhow, what do you guys think?
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking that the term cryptocurrency has probably single-handedly caused the most trouble for new people getting into the industry, because it's difficult when you wrap your head around the idea of a currency to go into this Web3 space and understand that is only the tip of the iceberg. And especially for, you know, the deeper you get into the programmable stuff, Ethereum and all the others, it's really so much more than a currency. And so it's great to see Bitcoin finding its place as such. But again, I think that term has really caused a lot of trouble over the years.
What do you think about the term coins? So a lot of comments I see of like people that are haters on the space are like, oh, have fun with your coins. Collect your little coins. I think that's a verbiage that doesn't do justice to the technology and stuff that's going on.
That's tough. Yeah, because
I like digital assets.
Yeah, I like digital assets too. And I think tokens are fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with the term token, even though that sounds more like something that you get at Chuck E. Cheese than a coin does. But hey, you know, call it what you want to call it. I think it's really, most importantly, it's just a matter of understanding that it's not, most of these assets are not meant to be used to buy coffee, you know, and you're not going to be doing day-to-day transactions with Bitcoin. And so that's probably the better way to look at it is there's not necessarily a right answer, but there's definitely a wrong answer, and that's cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I like digital assets. And I think they're going to evolve, you know, as the years go on, people will make it easier and easier to spend, but I think primarily, you know, thinking about it in that lens, through that lens, is the right way to do it.
Well, yeah, and digital assets encompasses all of the tokenization, you know, paradigm, I guess, that we're going to see rolling out over the next few years. That's that, you know, a digital asset having something that is tokenized on the blockchain. I don't know what else you'd call that. So that's the term we're calling it now. That's what we're going to go with.
So we talked a little bit about Ethereum, but as the number two largest coin, it deserves a little bit more discussion. I know a lot of people who listen to our podcast hold Ethereum, and I have seen a lot of sadness, I would say, and a lot of depression and a lot of capitulation in Ethereum, just particularly because it's getting outpaced by even old dinosaur coin Bitcoin, right? Like pretty much every single coin has outpaced Ethereum this year. And I guess my question that I want to pose to the caucus here is why? You know, why do you think that dynamic unfolded? And do you think that dynamic is going to unfold in the future? And Brendan, I want to hear from you first.
Yeah. So I would say that the root of the problem here has got to be the gas fee issue. And so transactions are getting kind of clogged up, and people don't want to spend the money on gas fees. Just yesterday, I tried to make a purchase. It's a really small order of $88 on Uniswap, and my gas fee was going to be $16. And most people just don't want to do that. You know, the average person,
you don't want to pay 20% fee to the credit card processor.
Yeah. And so the average person is going to say, well, why don't I go trade on Coinbase? Why don't I go trade on another chain? Why don't I do anything but the Ethereum main chain, because that is where I'm getting taxed the hardest. It's where I'm losing the most money every time I want to do something. And so it's kind of at the spot now where projects and users alike are going elsewhere. Projects are forced to either use a layer two or some sort of scaling solution if they want to use the Ethereum main chain. And users are kind of in the same boat where they're saying, all right, well, I'm just going to look to other ecosystems. And that's why we're seeing Solana do so well. It's why we're seeing Avalanche do so well. It's why we're seeing everything that's plugged into Cosmos do so well, because people can go over there and spend 1 cent to a few cents on their transactions, have them done almost instantly, and kind of call it a day. And so I would kind of say that is like the root of the problem here. And the good news is that we have solutions that are, I was going to say on the horizon, but they're like already in front of us. We have these viable solutions, and it's just a matter of implementing them, whether they are something that is off the Ethereum main chain, or even like Vitalik kind of proposed in his 6-part plan to fixing Ethereum, in really implementing sharding and kind of solving a lot of these scalability issues that he knows exists. And so, you know, maybe it's one of those scenarios, and I want to get all of your thoughts on this, but maybe it's one of those scenarios where the Ethereum developers have made a ton of money since Ethereum is appreciated so much. And maybe now they're kind of kicking back a little bit, because this is one of those things where, like, I would say it's the most pressing issue that needs to be fixed on Ethereum now for the masses is, like, again, we're not even in the full-fledged bull market yet. What's going to happen when Ethereum goes crazy? Like, what's going to happen when the whole crypto space goes crazy? What's going to happen when we see an Ethereum ETF approval? Like, there's so many factors that could make the crypto space so much more volatile and active than it already is. And I think, again, the most pressing issue for me is just, you know, solving some of those scalability problems.
Yeah. Now the jury's still out, right? I mean, if this is going to continue, there's so many competitors now. And, you know, over the past, you know, 5 or 6 years, everybody's been talking about, oh, we're building the next Ethereum killer, right? Everybody wants to, you know, be the next Ethereum and have the economy and ecosystem that it has. So everybody wants to imitate it and imitate the success it's had. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you kind of look at, you know, if you're an institution or if you are, you know, somebody who's responsible for a lot of money, whether it's yours or somebody else's, you know, a lot of the times you don't really want to move your money off of Ethereum and onto some of these newer burgeoning ecosystems. The risk is so high, right? Ethereum is battle tested and it still fails sometimes. So you're paying a premium to kind of transact on the preeminent network. Whereas if I bridge over to Phantom a couple $100,000 or something, or bridge over to, you know, some other newer chain, you know, the liquidity is just not there, right? And so there's slippage, there's all sorts of craziness. And I think that's also why there's been so much money that's made, because it is so illiquid. So, you know, just a couple big players could move prices around a lot on some of these smaller chains. But, you know, I think Ethereum, like when the institutional wave really does come, I think Ethereum still will, you know, take in a lot of that capital. I think a lot of people, after kind of the froth dies down on Solana, right? After Bonk and all these things stop going up 160 times your money. Imagine, you know, throwing $1,000 in there, and then a couple months later you got $160,000. I mean, that's what some people have been doing, and that stuff's not sustainable. And I think once that kind of starts to get edged out, not saying when it's going to be, right? It could go on for 6 months. The markets can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. And so it very well could be a trend that persists. But at some point, I think that this trend reverts back to the average. And I do think, you know, Ethereum does get some kind of sort of run where, you know, it plays catch up a little bit. So it'll be, you know, jury's still out. It'll be interesting to see. And a lot of these chains are, you know, a lot of these chains are competitive, certainly, you know, very competitive on fees. But I think security and, you know, liquidity is what people are paying a premium for. Any other thoughts there, Matt, before we kind of move on?
Oh, a ton of thoughts. Yeah.
Where do I start? How much time do we have?
Yeah. I think it's important to separate price and market sentiment from the technological innovation when looking at Ethereum, because Ethereum at its core was meant to be a platform for people to build whatever they wanted. It was open source. It was experimental, you know, and it allowed people to build anything. If they could program it, they could deploy it to Ethereum and the entire world could use it immediately. Mm-hmm. What we've seen over the last few years is that EVM, the Ethereum Virtual Machine standard, has become the standard across the industry. And in that respect, I tend to think that it's better to look at all of the what I think have been called ETH killers in the past, instead of looking at them as competitors, really look at them as a piece of the Ethereum ecosystem, because now Ethereum has, you know, experienced this technological maturation where that's where the commercial applications are. That's if you look at who's using the most of Ethereum's computational power, it's all applications. You know, it's things like Uniswap and Aave and so on and so forth. At the same time, the innovation has been priced out. And so now a lot of the experimental stuff is on Optimism and Arbitrum and Base and so on and so forth. And those applications can come back to Ethereum if there's a need to do so, but they don't have to, because they have all the benefits of Ethereum with all the support from the development network, because it's the same programming language. And then on top of that, you know, they have the liquidity and the ecosystem and the ability for users to easily go from Ethereum to, you know, any of those aforementioned EVM environments. And so ultimately, I think Ethereum might be, it's not being maybe adequately priced by the market right now, but to say that Ethereum is dying or any of these competitors have killed Ethereum, I think is misunderstanding the state of the market from a technological standpoint, specifically with just the dominance of EVM. So there are plenty of other, you know, Solana is a great example of a true competitor because it's a different language and there's, you know, different developers there. But what we're seeing is this rise of the multi-chain future that we have talked about for many years and seems to be working out that way. So it'll be interesting to see how that continues to develop, especially as things like gaming. You know, you don't really want to build a game on top of Ethereum because you'll alienate your whole audience with transaction fees. But you would want to build something like a tokenization platform because that's where the security is and that's where the liquidity is. So it's great to see the industry growing up and actually becoming something that is commercially viable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to clarify my point from earlier, because I think I was maybe a little bit too harsh on Ethereum. Ethereum is something that I'm massively bullish on. And it's not like they haven't done anything. When you look at the tokenomics side of Ethereum, they've done so much. I mean, so many improvements. Just to list a few, they are now fully deflationary. They're deflationary for the entire entirety of 2023, with the exception of the month of October. They're currently sitting at a 0.84 deflationary rate. They have great, their amount of Ethereum that is circulating on exchanges is at multi-year lows. Their amount of active Ethereum is also at multi-year lows, which just basically means that it's rarer than it has been in a long time. Their deposit to withdrawal ratios for their staking programs are also looking incredible. So there's a lot of things on like the tokenomics and on the on-chain side of things that are looking really strong for Ethereum. And so I kind of just wanted to like, you know, ease back from my point from earlier. I was a little harsh on the
I see where you're coming from. And you're hitting on a really key point, is that Ethereum right now is, you know, losing its maximum supply kind of day over day. It's not increasing its maximum supply. It's decreasing that, right? And how many coins are circulating. So Ethereum is actually getting taken off the open market as more applications use it, right? There's, you know, EIP 1559 is the fee burning mechanism where, you know, as the applications sort of generate fees and stuff, they burn Ethereum. And, you know, when you have something like, you know, not to pick on Celestia, I think, you know, good guys, you know, incredible product, great team. But in, you know, 9 months from now or whatever, there's going to be a huge unlock of new supply. And these are going to be guys that got in really early, right? The VCs, the angel investors, the seed investors that, you know, again, I don't have the exact date in front of me, but, you know, sometime in 2024, there's going to be a huge supply unlock. And this happens on all the different chains, whether it's Optimism and Arbitrum or Cosmos or whatever. You know, there's all of these, you know, Cosmos is super inflationary, like 20% per year. It's inflating, meaning you have to, that's the hurdle. You have to get at least above 20% before you make it break even. Like that's a huge sort of hurdle to kind of get above. And that's what inflation does to people. Obviously, inflation was a big topic in the U.S. dollar over the past year. It's kind of come down a bit, but with Ethereum being deflationary, I think is kind of, you know, going to change the calculus as some of these newer chains actually start unlocking massive amounts of supply, and then people want to insulate themselves from that potential dump, so they are going to move back into Ethereum. And like you mentioned, somebody mentioned it, the bridging is now so easy. You could get back and forth from one chain to another in minutes, in seconds, right? I mean, so it's going to be, you know, I think, you know, pendulums always go one direction back to another. We're kind of seeing it right now, or we had, you know, not to get political, but we had like the Republican Trump pendulum, right? 2016, it swung really far right because people were fed up with, you know, Obama's economics and all that kind of stuff. And then boom, as this pendulum started to swing, people got really fed up with, you know, Trump and all of his antics. And so they elected Biden. And now everybody's getting fed up with Biden. So it's going back to, you know, so like things always kind of swing back and forth towards extremes. And so right now, I mean, even as we're recording this, I think it's probably a good point to maybe just bring up some charts real quick as Ethereum is breaking new lows relative to Bitcoin. And so if we kind of zoom in here, scale the price chart, you could see right now, you know, Ethereum in terms of Bitcoin, so this is ETH relative to BTC, has been forming a kind of a descending triangle, which, as we all know, is a bearish pattern. It looks like it finally has kind of broken out and completed this. It's taken in a lot of volume at these sort of consolidation levels, and it's making new lows. So, you know, you do have kind of the final sort of hair, you know, this support line is as thick as a piece of hair, is what I'm trying to say here. That if it stands, if it stands, God willing, you know, the Ethereum ecosystem is going to remain strong. But it looks like, you know, the lows that we put in back in the summer of 2022 are being tested right now, and the conviction of the market's being tested. So I'm going to be very curious. I mean, maybe instead of even asking, you know, if you guys think that this is going to, you know, do you guys think it's going to hold, or do you guys think it's going to fall? You know, at the end of the call, we should ask, you know, do you think that, you know, Ethereum in terms of Bitcoin this time next year, you know, which volume point of control is it going to gravitate towards, right? This is, you know, the valley that we're in the middle of right now, where very little volume is traded. And these are, you know, little, you know, areas of mass that have gravity. And so we're going to see, you know, the market always wants to swing from one side to another. And we had consolidated quite a bit of volume up here, as you could see. And now we're very quickly swinging back down to this volume point of control around 0.03. So I'm curious to see what you guys think, if Ethereum is going to kind of, you know, find some support here and kind of bounce back up towards, you know, relatively being strong against Bitcoin, or if it's going to kind of wobble and then, you know, roll over back to its trading range, really from between 2017 and, you know, mid 2021. It's really going to be interesting to see. You know, for me, I think that as the Bitcoin ETF launches, you know, it might be a blow off top and interest on Bitcoin. And then you could have like a catalyst for a reversion back to some Ethereum strength as the market starts to speculate on Ethereum ETFs. But we could talk about that more in a little. We'll take a quick look at BTC in terms of the US dollar. You know, as Brendan mentioned, you know, making higher lows all throughout the year. Okay, I mean, we had a really strong sort of consolidation up here, had a pretty sizable dip here to start December, but, you know, the trend is very clearly up. You could see, as defined by the 20-day moving averages, the 20-day moving average has acted as very strong support, short-term, you know, support indicator. The 50-day moving average hasn't even been tested since October of 2023, around the 17th. And the 200-day moving average is that your long-term sort of indicator that has been some strong support. So, and you're getting good volume along the way. So, you know, Bitcoin, you know, remains bullish, you know, for the foreseeable future. But if you look at Ethereum, even in terms of the dollar, you know, that's kind of a messy chart. Let me remove some of that stuff. It doesn't look horrible. What it really looks like is happening is here's a big resistance point, right? This was the high, the bounce after the Luna crisis. After the Luna crisis, it kind of bottomed out around $1,700 and bounced all the way back up to around $2,200, which is kind of where we're at right now. Set that strong resistance. That resistance was the highest point the market had been at since, you know, May of 2022. So we finally broke above it, and it does look like we're kind of bull flagging on that sort of long term resistance, and we're looking for support. So I think, you know, as Ethereum does find support, and you can see it's respecting the trend indicators, right? It is respecting the 20-day average in a sense. It's certainly respecting the 50-day average. So things, you know, don't look horrible for ETH relative to the dollar. So, you know, you're going to be making money in the ETH market relative to the dollar. But it doesn't look as good as, you know, something like AVAX, right? AVAX US dollar, which has just been, you know, completely obliterating any level of resistance here. You know, very strong trend. Solana, as we mentioned, just completely breaking out. Here's that same sort of resistance point after the Luna crisis that Solana consolidated on and has continued to break out from. So, you know, they're leading the pack right now, and I think ETH will play some catch up. But yeah, that's kind of how I'm looking at it. I want to also show you guys Total3. Which is, you know, a pretty awesome sort of chart here that I drew up for you guys, if I do say so myself. We've got a really strong pivot here at $500 billion market cap, which was resistance, turned support, and then again, resistance after that sort of Luna crisis. By the way, this was one of the worst months of my life over here in May of 2022, as the market completely kicked me in the teeth. But we all learn and we all get better. And so as you can see, I've got this yellow line right here. This yellow line is actually just the inverse of this price action right here. So kind of what we see in a lot of the times in markets is that they, in areas in the past where prices have moved very quickly, back on the way the other direction, it tends to move very quickly as well. You can see this lack of volume that traded right here. This big valley of volume between a $500 billion market cap and a $600 billion market cap. It really elevators up and down through it. You can see elevators up, elevators down, elevators up, elevators down. So we haven't had the elevator back up in a while. And so what I did here was just took the inverse of this and flipped it and charted it that way. And you can see there is potential in this zone right now as we break above this sort of resistance, which we have broken above the volume weighted average price resistance here from that same point. We haven't broken above horizontal resistance yet. But as we do, this is where fireworks could happen. So, the prices could move very quickly through this area. So I'm pretty excited about the altcoin market as, altcoins go from about a $475 billion market cap to very quickly it could double, right? As you can see, very quickly in this same area, it lost half of its value. And so I'm very excited about just the altcoin market broadly here. And I kind of wanted to turn it to you guys. If you have one thing you're looking forward to in 2024, maybe it's a certain altcoin launching, maybe it's some big upgrade. Who knows? I'm curious, Tivo, I want to start with you. What are you looking forward to in 2024?
If people are avid listeners, a couple weeks back, we looked at that chart for YouTube views and we compared it to the price action. Mm. And so we've had awesome price action over the last, call it three, obviously the year's been great, but the last 3 months, right? We all agree. I mean, it's been a pretty awesome move to the upside. And if you compared those charts, it was the price action flew up and YouTube views, Google searches across the board stayed the same. So, and I confirm with that with people in my own life, friends, family that aren't that interested in the space, they haven't been calling or texting. We got one last week. I got one Bitcoin one last week, but
it's just the start.
Yeah, it's just the start. And so obviously it seems set up with the ETF, and hopefully some more positive price action that it could be an amazing 2024, but I'm really interested obviously in what I do for us, of getting our content out there to the masses on social media. Is like, when is that crazy Google hit and YouTube hit going to go? And then that's, I think, would relate into the chart you just showed of that elevator up. Once mm-hmm. that starts happening, everything's going to snowball from videos to prices in a good way, not snowball down, but elevator up. That's what I'm looking for. As soon as we start to see that is when I'm going to get really excited.
What about you? What about you, Matt? Anything you're looking forward to particularly?
It's hard to say specifically because there's so much going on across the whole industry, but I do think that, for anyone who has followed the way that technology finds its way into our daily lives, there's this idea of crossing the chasm where technology is developed slow, kind of slowly at first. And then there's this period of, okay, is this really useful? And then it becomes mainstream after crossing the chasm of disillusionment. And so I think that 2024 is, if it's not the year, we're very close. And I'm excited to see so much innovation happening in the space that really is using the building blocks of what's been, created in this industry to make real commercial applications and real companies and user-facing applications, all of the above. 24 might be the year that we cross the chasm.
What about you, Brennan?
I'm excited to see kind of that barrier to entry continue to get removed. Not just for people who want to like purchase cryptocurrencies, or, you know, as we like to call them, crypto assets, but also for people just utilizing blockchain tech for everyday reasons and everyday purposes. You know, I want us to kind of get to the point to where, you know, we can go up to someone and they can say, hey, what do you do? We can say, hey, you know, we're a blockchain analyst. And the next question will no longer be, you know, what is a blockchain? You know, what does a blockchain analyst mean? I'm kind of excited to see crypto get to the point where people are familiar with what blockchain technology is, because they're using it on a daily basis, kind of in the same way of how we've seen the internet go from a question of like, oh, what is the internet? I'm sure we've all seen those old kind of like news interviews.
The videos from like the Today Show.
Yeah.
Like, what even is internet?
Exactly. And that's kind of the place that I see of where we're at in crypto right now, where people are like, you know, what is blockchain? What is a blockchain? Like, what are cryptocurrencies? How are they used? And I think that we will get to a point where we are looking back to these same interviews about crypto in the same way that we look back to people asking questions of like, what is the internet? And like, now it's so silly to us. We're like, what is the internet? Like, how could you not know? But I think that there will be this moment in the future, you know, whether it's a year from now or 10 years from now, where crypto's in the same boat. And we're seeing so much effort being put towards making sure that all of crypto and blockchain tech in its entirety is made accessible and easy to understand for the average person.
Yeah, I think that's a great note to kind of end it on, just kind of thinking about the opportunity that we have before us with crypto, investing in crypto. You know, think about the difficulties. You know, I speak to clients and customers and they're like, you know, it's difficult to use crypto, right? It's difficult to send money around and take advantage of these opportunities. But that's exactly where sort of the opportunity lies in a new market. So imagine, you know, back in the early 90s, you refuse to invest in any internet company because you don't understand it and because you don't know how to use it. You would be wrong. Right? You'd be, you know, millionaire multiple times over if you invested in some of those early internet stocks, even though their user interface was horrible and, you know, the experience was a nightmare and confusing. The newness of the whole thing was how money was made, right? Because you're doing something that nobody else is doing. And that's kind of the rule of the life. That's the rule of life, right? Like, you know, value is very scarce. If you are doing something that everybody else is doing, that's probably not that valuable. You probably won't get compensated for it that much if you have, you know, a skill that somebody else can do, right? And it's commoditizable. Whereas now we have, you know, you got something that's very rare and very unique, right? That tends to be scarce and more valuable. And so we have the opportunity to invest in a technology that's very new, still confusing, but there's an arbitrage happening, an arbitrage of perception almost, if you will. Whereas some people are still discounting this technology like they discounted the internet because it's too confusing for them. But you have to get out of your own mind and say, well, what do other smart, you know, why are smart people looking at this? Why are smart people talking about this? And, you know, follow wherever that kind of, that rabbit hole takes you. For me, you know, I realized, wow, this is a really new formative, you know, fundamental sort of technology. And even though, you know, I don't understand every single aspect of it, you know, I'm not going to let that stop me from investing. But anyhow, I also wanted to kind of end with this last chart. This is a chart, like kind of TiVo mentioned, about, you know, how many people are you Googling crypto on a day-by-day basis. So you can see, obviously, in 2015, you know, nobody's, you know, talking about it. All of a sudden, 2017 comes around. There's a huge spike. And then the bear market happens. Then again, another bull market again, kind of looks like the price chart, right? Bull market comes. Now are in a bear market and we're currently, you know, at extreme lows where, you know, the Bitcoin conversation and the crypto conversation is. And I think that, you know, if we talk about, you know, where this chart might be next year, this chart might be, you know, at new highs with more conversation and all that stuff. So with that being said, guys, now's a good time to be a crypto investor. I hope everybody who's watching, you know, is not sidelined. I hope, you know, this is now the time to zoom in and to, you know, to pay attention, because it's going to be a crazy, crazy fun 2024. If you guys stuck through the bear market, don't close up shop now. I would say stick around and keep listening to Crypto 101. We're going to have more info for you guys day in, day out. and check out the show notes for all sorts of other information that we are circulating. So with that, Matt, Brendan, TiVo, any final words, any last memes to leave us with, any last predictions? Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, exactly. Predictions. We got to get our Bitcoin price. So we'll be doing this 1 year from now.
Uh-oh.
Again. So where are we going?
Let's do the reverse of the order last time.
I knew that was coming.
Matt's like trying Matt's to hide in first. The back. He's like, don't pick me first.
So, all right. So then the order's Matt, Bryce, Brendan, and then I go last this time.
Ooh. All right. I'm going to take the bullish case, and I'm going to say 97.5.
Woohoo!
Wow. 97.5.
I like it. Just shy of 100K. Then the market dumps just and everybody
shy.
Goes home.
Just shy.
Okay, for me, 97.55. No, just kidding. I'm not that big of a dick.
97.501.
I think this time next year, I'm going to go 80,000. 80,000 on the head, which is, you know, a little less than double from where we're at right now. Today we're at 44,000 on the head. I'll go 80,000.
You know, I went a little bit conservative last year with my estimates. So this year I feel like it's only necessary that I compensate for it. I was going to go 85, but instead of being in the middle of the range or at the bottom of this range, you know what? I'm going to go above and beyond this year. Give me 102.
Okay.
Wow. There it is. That's a first. I think that's a first for a Crypto 101 podcast. 100.
Oh,
100K
yeah. Six
plus.
Figures.
Yeah. I'm torn. I mean, I want to be the degenerate and say like 120. But I think that there's kind of like we talked about when everybody's scared and you know, it's now's the time to get in. There's something, it feels like last year was the hold your nose and buy, and that's where you're rewarded. And something, I think we're going to go up. I'm excited for it, but there's something that seems like everything's too perfectly lined up.
Yeah.
Like over the next year, it almost seems too perfect. And I know we all hope we ride the elevator up to brand new highs and keep going. I'm going 88. I like double numbers. Last year we did 33. I'm going 88.
Okay. So you guys are making me the quintessential bear of the group. All right. Love it.
I was going to take 45 under Tivo's kind of, you know, thoughts too, but nah, we're going all in.
Yeah. Bryce.
Yeah, no, you guys are right. I mean, things are good. And sometimes if things seem too good to be true, it isn't. So
it seems too perfect and we can't trust BlackRock. Even though they're on our team trying to get the SEC and all that, we can't trust them.
It's fair. I love it. All right, guys. Well, thank you for your time. Everybody at home listening, I hope you guys enjoyed. Hope you guys, if you're just on Spotify or just on, you know, Apple or Podbean or wherever, pop over to YouTube, check us out, see our ugly mugs, all of our chart work, and have some fun with us. But until then, we'll see you guys same time, same place next week. Thank you.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, With over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.